Welcome to Hope Beyond the Badge, a podcast that brings awareness, inspiration, and conversation together for first responders, families, and others interested in mental well-being and first response. New episodes weekly with your hosts, Jay Bailey and Linda Kokoros. Jay is a father, a military veteran, worked in the fire service for 18 years, and carries a diagnosis of PTSD. Linda is a mom, a wife, a certified life coach for first responders, and a suicide loss survivor of a first responder. Let's talk about it. Our guest today is Julie Lovely. Julie is here to talk about her Wild Hearts Therapeutic Equestrian Program, a program that provides active duty and veteran service members with an alternative to coping with post-traumatic stress and brain injuries. Julie, we're looking forward to hearing all about your program. First, would you mind taking a moment to introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I run Wild Hearts Therapeutic Equestrian Program, and we work with veterans and first responders to address trauma that they may have experienced. And we do that through working with our horses.
Mm. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where is Wild Hearts? Where is it situated?
Sure. So it's located in West Bridgewater. It's my small backyard farm. We just have a couple acres. And it's very private, and we like it that way. We like to keep it small and private and intimate, just to make sure that everybody gets plenty of one-on-one time with all of our horses.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Tell us a little bit about how long you've been doing this, why you wanted to get into this in the first place, when the program started, how long you've been doing it, what inspired you to do this in the first place.
Sure. So the program was started in 2009, and originally it was primarily therapeutic riding, and we worked with children and adults who had special needs. And I wanted to start a program like this because I grew up volunteering at a therapeutic riding program, and it had such an unbelievable impact on me just watching what working with horses did for the people who came to the program. Back in those days, so this was in, I grew up in the 80s and graduated high school in 1995. So this was my childhood in the 80s, early 90s. And there really wasn't, you couldn't really go to school for this type of stuff. You know, it was just, you got involved in a program and it wasn't something you really pursued as a career. So I went to college for graphic design and later got out of college and worked for a while as a designer and then went back to school for an MBA and thought I was going to work in corporate marketing and realized that that just wasn't a good fit for me and don't know what I was thinking exactly, but that's what I thought I wanted to do. And no offense to corporate marketers out there, but, I ended up moving to West Bridgewater in 2008, and it was very close to a really great program, the Bridge Center. And At that point, I got my therapeutic riding instructor license and just got back into everything that I had been doing, growing up. And I had a little farm in West Bridgewater, and I thought, well, I'd really love to start a small little program myself. And I had gone to school for entrepreneurship, so I kind of had the drive to start something from the ground up. And it was really successful. It was almost too successful, and it became bigger than I could handle myself. So
who was your clients at the time?
We had children and adults with a variety of special needs. So we worked with people who had autism. We worked with adults that had physical disabilities. it typically wasn't mental health. People weren't necessarily coming for mental health, but we had a lot of volunteers who wanted to volunteer to address their own mental health challenges. Mm. So people who were experiencing depression or anxiety, and they were coming to volunteer and be around the horses. So the therapeutic riding part got really big, and there were so many students and volunteers and so much coordination, and it just became more than I could handle. And it seemed like what was really needed was something that was going to address mental health in the community. So since the Bridge Center existed in Bridgewater, and it seemed like it was a better idea was to address the mental health aspect of working with horses, that was the direction I took the program in 2013. So we actually stopped therapeutic riding. And in 2013, we started our equine-assisted psychotherapy program. And then in 2014, we started our horsemanship program for veterans. And that was specifically to address post-traumatic stress and trauma.
Okay. So that was the start of the therapy program that you have today?
Yeah.
In 2014?
Yes. Wow, yeah.
So just about 10 years now.
Yeah, almost 10 years. Yeah. Yeah, the psychotherapy program did start 10 years ago. It's hard to believe.
So we had an opportunity to visit the farm and meet the horses and get to sort of see them and you and speak with you. So I have a great picture of what that is like and what the people are going to receive. Share with us a little bit. Let's get into the programs. What type of programs do you offer?
Yeah.
Are they different? Different methods?
Yeah. It might be easier to explain sort of how the programs have changed over the years to explain.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we first started the program, we were really focusing on horsemanship. And it was definitely more task-based. So we were teaching people how to communicate with our horses. And we did that through a variety of different natural horsemanship techniques. We were definitely building relationships with the horses, but it was focused more on tasks, natural horsemanship activities. And it's not to say that it wasn't really helpful for people. We had really great feedback. We had people who came to the program for years and years and years and really absolutely loved coming here and working with our horses. But it started to sort of evolve. I would say it was the beginning of the change was probably in 2019, right before COVID. And I was starting to change the way that I worked with horses, and I was focusing more on relationship and connection first, before I really worried about any type of training. It was all relationship and connection. And so when COVID happened, it kind of put a damper on it because we had to stop for a while and we weren't able to bring people to the farm. But the one good thing is it sort of gave me a chance to figure out where I was going with this program and what I wanted it to look like. And over that time, I did just a lot of, education for myself and a lot of work with the horses. And I think I everything that I do with people now with the horses, I've done myself. I've taken this journey myself, the same journey that people are, taking to address their trauma.
Yeah.
So it really, over COVID, it did give me a chance to spend some time trying to figure out, where we were going with this. And that's when I found natural lifemanship, which is, it's a approach toward equine assisted services. And it's based on the science of relationships. So you're working with the nervous system, you're focusing on connection, relationships, attachment, and it all started to come together. It all started to make sense. I felt like, even though we were doing really good work, I felt like a lot of the principles that I was teaching people didn't quite fit when you tried to translate them to human relationships. And that was one of the things that really resonated with me with natural lifemanship, was the principles apply across the board. So whether you're working with horses or you're working with people, it applies across the board. And wow, that just made sense in terms of, especially when you've been through trauma, because you're always sort of seeking safety. And where I felt like traditional horsemanship was kind of trying to make sure that the horse was in control. And, you know, it's kind of an illusion that you can control a 1,000-pound horse or a 1,500-pound horse. Mm. And so now the way that I work with horses is I'm in control of myself and they're in control of themselves. And it's not about me controlling their feet or, you know, trying to get them to do what I want them to do. We're building the relationship first. And when you think about that in terms of human relationships, you know, when you have a really good connection with someone, whether it's your spouse or a friend or your children, do you want them to be obedient to you? No, you want to have a connection. Yeah. You want both people to be doing what's best for the relationship, not because one is in control of the other.
Yeah.
So it just, all of the principles made so much sense to me. And that's really the model that we follow now.
Wow. Yeah. And that is amazing. I told you before, I want to take that program. I want to do all of that. It's even a great feeling, actually, with just sitting, listening to you talking. I mean, yeah, it's just a good one. Do you want to chime in there, Jay?
Yes. So I read on your Facebook page, and you just mentioned something about connection. I read that social connection is a biological imperative, which stopped me dead in my tracks, and I wanted to know more. And it says that's a concept that guides all that you do at Wild Hearts. Can you maybe give us an example of a way that that a participant would interact with the horses and how that translates helps them relearn how to establish more fulfilling human connections?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and I heard that that you know, connection and relationship is a biological imperative from a psychologist, and I honestly can't remember where I heard it. I came across it somewhere. It's probably on our Facebook page. And that really, I mean, that hit home as to why this all makes so much sense. Because as a species, we have to connect with other, you know, other beings in order to thrive, in order to survive. And so when someone comes to our program, we do a lot of nervous system regulation, and we do this with our horses because, coincidentally, a human's brain that's been through trauma is actually very similar to the way a horse's brain functions. So horses are fight-flight animals. You know, they will typically choose flight before they choose fight. They, you know, assess a situation and they're usually going to run away before whatever it is they think, you know, can get them. But when we work with horses, you know, in a domestic situation, we can help them to build the cross brain connections, just like we can help rewire our own brains so that we aren't always living in our, survival regions of our brain. We're not always living in the fight, flight, freeze regions of our brain. We do have the ability to rewire our brains through nervous system regulation, and building relationships with these horses that will allow us to ultimately gain more control over our responses so that we aren't carried away by, you know, our feeling like our brain is just sort of like doing things that is baffling to us. And, you know, the thing I always try to remember is that nothing our brain does is truly baffling. It may seem baffling, but, right, you know, our brain is protecting us. Yep. And same thing with a horse. You know, their brain is protecting them. That's how they have survived for all of these years as very large prey animals. You know, they can't hide, so yeah. They have to run. And so when we work with horses and we work on regulating the nervous system, we work on building the cross-brain connections by asking a horse for connection and giving them the choice as to whether or not they want to connect. It allows us to look at our own patterns of behavior and try out new patterns of behavior. And the horses will give us instantaneous feedback, and it's non-judgmental. That's the really important part. There is no judgment. A horse is not judging you, you know, based on who you are, where you've grown up, how much money you have, the experiences you've been through. They're just responding to what is going on, the energy and the intention that you're bringing in that moment. So we do lots of different activities. Some are with the horse and some are actually not with the horses, where we do learn how to regulate our nervous system and how to pay attention to our body sensations. Because that's where we're really starting, is in the survival regions of the brain. Mm-hmm. And then we try to move up into the part of the brain that deals with movement, because movement helps to regulate the nervous system.
Yeah.
It's called we learned this in natural lifemanship, it's the diencephalon. So we deal with the brainstem, which is like our sensing brain, and then the diencephalon is the movement. And then our limbic system is emotional connection. And then we deal with our neocortex, the thinking brain. So we're really sort of like, if you're thinking about this very simplified map of the brain, we're sort of moving up from the fight, flight, survival regions of the brain to our neocortex. And so that's where we have the opportunity to pause before our fight flight takes over and our neocortex can say, no, you're safe. It's okay. And that's what we try to do with our horses too. And we absolutely can rewire their brains. That's the whole concept of neuroplasticity. Wow. And we absolutely, you know, it's so funny because this question just came up on a forum I'm on online, and somebody asked, they're working with a horse and the horse has been through trauma in its life. And they asked, do you think that this horse can actually move past this trauma, or will it stay with them forever? Mm. And my answer was that absolutely he can move past the trauma just like a human can, because that's the concept of neuroplasticity. We can build new connections in our brain by having the right experiences. Mm-hmm. So we absolutely do not have to be, it's not a life sentence that we've gone through trauma. Mm-hmm. And that comes from Bessel van der Kolk. I love his work. And, you know, he just believes that it's not a life sentence. We absolutely can change our brains and move past trauma. And we can do this by building a relationship with a horse.
Wow.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. You mentioned the horse having a similar response to the fight or flight. Does a horse have a frontal lobe?
Yes, that's such a great question, because there is actually so much misinformation out there. There's a fairly recently published book that's really kind of disturbing, because it's very recently published and it's by a well-respected person who says that a horse has no frontal lobe. Horses absolutely have a frontal lobe. They don't have, you know, as developed of a neocortex as a human has. So they don't have the ability like a human has, you know, to reason the way humans do, which is one of the reasons why when we're working with horses and say a horse isn't doing what, you know, we want them to do, mm-hmm. well, we can't attribute things like, oh, he's being stubborn, or, oh, he's just trying to piss me off today. He knows what I want. He's just not doing it because he's being, you know, he's just being a pain. Horses don't have that ability. to reason it out like that and say, well, I'm going to do this just to make you mad today. It's like, yeah, horses don't do that. They just, you know, they're going to just respond to the situation. You know, they're not going to piece together, you know, other information and say, well, I'm just going to do this to make you mad today. But they absolutely have a frontal lobe and a neocortex, and they do have the ability to regulate themselves so that they aren't always living in this fight, flight, survival region of their brain. Stephen Peters he wrote in conjunction with a horse trainer, a well-known horse trainer, a book called Evidence-Based Horsemanship. And it's pretty technical, but it's so interesting because he gets all into the structure of the horse's brain. He's done dissections of horses' brains. And so he can pinpoint exactly where the horse's frontal lobe is. It's a really important concept that a horse does in fact have the ability to stop, pause, and assess something before they let their fight flight take over, just like humans can learn to do too.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. I mean, that's just amazing. Like, I just find all of this so fascinating that it makes me want to learn more and more and more about it. Yep. Every time I hear you speak, it's just fascinating that can happen. That connection can happen with the horses. Having said that, how do participants learn this connection through you? How do you teach that to someone who's participating in it?
Yeah, so we spend a lot of time doing, we usually start the session with some type of nervous system regulation. So that's generally not with the horses. That's usually, you know, we kind of have a group check-in and we do some type of nervous system regulation. So whether it's, you know, we'll do like a connected body scan where we really kind of look at, we scan our body and we look for places of tension. We will look for places of relaxation, and then we kind of bounce between the two. so that we really are trying to tune into our body sensations. That's where we really feel like everything needs to start, is dealing with our body sensations.
Yeah.
Because so often, you know, we're too much in our head, you know, we're not tuned into what's going on in our bodies.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're taught from a young age to just sort of ignore our body sensations. And, you know, that's where everything starts. And that's where horses live. You know, horses are very in tune with their body sensations. So that's not to say, though, that a horse can't disassociate, that a horse can't shut down. So, you know, if they're in chronic pain, for example, they absolutely can shut down in order to shut that pain out. But that's a whole other story. I don't want to go off on a tangent.
Wow.
So we start with nervous system regulation. Like I said, we'll do like a connected body scan, or we do this one activity that everyone absolutely loves. It's with the ropes. Ropes are just, they're a tool that we use in the ring to be able to, you know, put pressure on a horse when we're asking for connection. And I'll talk more about pressure in a minute. Mm-hmm. But we have these long ropes, and we start out just by swinging the ropes really rhythmically. We, you know, count to 15, we bring our body energy up really high. We bring our body energy down low. We sort of explore the range of energy by using these ropes. And everyone
are they working with horses at the time?
We're not working with horses. We're just working just with the ropes by ourselves. Yeah. So that we can really kind of explore our limits of body energy and how it feels to go really high and how it feels to go really low, so that we can start to gain some control over our energy and how that feels, you know, from a regulated state. Because sometimes when we bring our body energy up really, really high, we start to feel dysregulated. Or, you know, if we have sort of our baseline of energy, if we bring our energy really low, we can start to feel really dysregulated. Yeah. So it's to help tune into, our, you know, our sensations in our bodies.
Yeah.
And that activity in particular, I love it because it brings in all parts of the brain. So, you know, you've got the sensing of the brainstem, you've got the movement of the diencephalon, you've got, and then when we start to count, we bring in our neocortex, because suddenly you have to think to be able to count while you're doing this movement. So it helps to just kind of regulate the nervous system and bring in all of those cross connections in that one simple activity. And that one's a favorite of everyone. They love that one. And I love it too, because, you know, we do work with ropes, you know, when we're trying to raise our body energy up and we feel like we've gotten as high as we possibly can, then we might need to bring in a tool. And so often, usually the tool that I choose is a rope. And it just allows me to kind of bring my energy up, and you can get a little bit closer to the horse without having to physically move closer to the horse, because it's more like an extension, you know, of your arm as you swing the rope.
Yeah.
And so it helps with rope skills as well, because you're, you know, swinging the rope and you're kind of getting good at the movement. So we'll do that one. We've also done tapping. Tapping is always a favorite of everyone. And I love tapping. It's a really great way to regulate the nervous system. So we do a variety of those types of things in the beginning. And then throughout the 8 weeks, we start with just getting to know our horses. So we have four of our own horses. Two are big, two are minis. And I generally have a volunteer who will bring two big horses as well. Mm-hmm. So we let everyone choose. We keep the group small, no more than four people. And we let people choose who they want to work with, if they want to work with the big horses or they want to work with one of the minis.
So everyone has their own horse.
They have their own horse, yep, for the 8 weeks. And the way the farm is set up, we have spaces that everyone can be with their horse. So in the beginning, people will spend time, you know, with their horses in the paddock, or if they're in the ring, by themselves. And we do, you know, different things, like we'll do some breathing with the horses where you're paying attention to their breath, you're paying attention to your breath. You're trying to see if their breath is regulated and rhythmic, trying to see if your breath is regulated and rhythmic. You can try to match your breath to theirs. It helps you to just tune in to the horse.
Yeah.
The whole time the horses are at liberty. So meaning that they're not on halters. They're not on lead ropes. They have the choice to walk away if they want to. And then we can ask them to connect with us again if they'd like to. So we really give the horses, you know, the ultimate choice. And then as the program progresses, we do some body work with the horses. We do the very first sort of foundational technique of the Masterson method, which is an approach to body work with horses that. I love this approach, because you have to have a conversation with the horse. So it's not, you're not really working the horse's muscles like you would say if you were doing, you know, horse massage or chiropractor or things like that, which also have really, you know, great purposes with horses. But the Masterson method, I love it because you have to have a conversation with the horse. You have to be attuned to their responses, and you have to know when to sort of back off in pressure and when to bring pressure, when to hold the pressure so that they'll release tension. So it's a way of working with horses to help them release tension in their bodies.
Wow.
And it really, it's so incredible. I have done it for a long time, and I love it every single time I do it, just to see the releases that horses will give us. And it depends on the horse. Sometimes they're very dramatic. Like they'll do these big yawns or they'll lay down and roll. And then other times they're very subtle. Like you just have to look for the very subtle release that they'll give you. But we had one of our participants, we did the Masterson method just this last session, and they were working on our horse Kipper. And Kipper is normally so stoic. He is just really stoic. He never shows you. I mean, unless he's really in pain, he doesn't show anything. And she was doing some Masterson method, and we actually got a couple pictures of it. And he just yawned these huge yawns. So unusual for him. So that was really, really cool that she was able to have that kind of impact on him.
So Jordan, this method that the participant was doing, they were speaking or touching the horse?
No. So it is all through just your energy. And you really don't necessarily even need to touch the horse. We move along the bladder meridians of the horse on either side, which sort of runs all along their top line down, sort of their rump past their tail, down their leg. And what you do is when you move your hand, and you can be touching them, there's sort of different levels of pressure that we teach in this method. But you move your hand along the bladder meridian, and when the horse shows a sign of tension, which can be very subtle, it can be just a blink, could be a little flare of the nostril, could be a little fidget, could be a tail swish, you stop and you just hold and you stand there. And if the horse starts to get a little fidgety, you can even release the pressure a little bit more, move your hand away a little bit more, as long as you're just bringing attention to that spot that has tension. And then generally, if you just hold long enough, the horse will release the tension. So that can be a deeper blink. It can be a like blowing out like a big breath. It can be a big yawn. It depends on the horse, how they're going to show that release.
Yeah.
But it's non-invasive. You know, we're not working muscles. It's just very, very light touch. And we're just bringing attention to spots of tension in the horse, which is helping us to become more attuned to their body language.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that is so powerful in working with horses, is it allows us to become attuned to another being and have them respond to us. Because asking for connection can be very vulnerable.
Yeah.
You're making a request for connection and you're sort of putting yourself out there and you're hoping your need is going to be met. You're saying, I need this, and you're hoping your need is going to be met. And so it's a really vulnerable place. And so we can practice this with horses.
And especially for someone who is gone through trauma, right, experiences, they are very vulnerable, right? And it is hard to make connections because they tend to isolate away from connection, right?
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah.
I'm still blown away here by this. So when you get and have a new session, you call it a session. It's 8 weeks, right?
Yes.
Yep. Each session. Is this run through the whole year or is it just certain times of the year?
Yeah. So we run 8-week sessions right now and they meet once a week for 2 hours on Friday mornings from 10 to 12. And we have two 8-week sessions. One is in the spring, it's in May and June, and then we have a second one in the fall, and that one's in September, October. I wish it could be ongoing, I wish we could do this all year round, but unfortunately, we don't have an indoor arena, so it gets really hot in the summertime, and it gets very cold in the wintertime. So we just don't have the facility to be able to run it all year round.
Yeah.
Just given the number of horses we have and the fact that our horses are, you know, they're pretty senior, they're older guys, except for our one mini who's only two. We just got her in January. But we, you know, are cognizant of how much work that they do. So, we just run the 2 8-week sessions currently.
Okay. And is there any other sessions, like a private session or, you know, a one-on-one session type of thing?
Yes. Yep. We also offer on Wednesdays, it's their private psychotherapy sessions. So they're trauma-focused psychotherapy, equine-assisted psychotherapy. And we have two slots. We have one at 10 a.m. and one at 11 a.m. on Wednesdays. And it runs for the same 8-week session as our Friday program. And those you work one-on-one with myself and our licensed mental health counselor and one of our horses. And so that is a little bit different. It depends on what you're looking for. The group program, it's very, it's focused from the present forward. So we do have a licensed mental health counselor that is involved with the session, but we're not sitting down and doing an intake and taking a history. You know, we're really just focused on helping people in the present to, you know, regulate their nervous systems and to be able to develop some skills to be able to cope with the trauma that they've been through. And kind of, you know, the beginnings of establishing connection and relationship in, you know, their everyday lives.
I love that.
The individual sessions, it's not like, oh, as soon as you sign up for an individual session, we're just going to dive right back into your childhood. It's not like that at all. But there is an intake, and you can go a little bit, you know, deeper should you choose to. So it's kind of like peeling away an onion, you know, the layers of the
layers,
onion. Peeling them away. And so with that, because it's one-on-one, I think you have a little bit more of an opportunity to kind of peel away layers, you know, in a private session. Generally, people who do that program, who do our private sessions, will often be working with another therapist. Because unfortunately we can't offer ongoing therapy just given the limitations of our, you know, our time and our resources. Those are, you know, offered short term. So a lot of times people will be working with another therapist. And our trauma therapist who works with us in those equine assisted psychotherapy sessions, she also has a private practice. So, you know, she can also continue to see people in her private practice.
Excellent. I love that. And I know we are going to have your trauma therapist on in one of our future podcasts, because it's important, right? We want to start to get that message out there for first responders, veterans, who, you know, want to seek alternative, right? More holistic approach, working with horses and have that option to be able to really have a connection. It's like a sense of self. I've been using this word quite a lot this week, but basically getting fine-tuned into a sense of self and knowing a little bit more, right, about yourself, and also hopefully carrying out into relationships, right? I think it's absolutely wonderful. Let's talk first responders, getting in there. Are most of your program, most of the program that you have, is it more veteran based, the 8 weeks, or first responders based? Tell us like where you would like to see that going, in the future, all of that stuff.
Yeah. So when we first started the Friday program, we focused on the veteran community. And that seemed to be, you know, what needed the most help. We heard so much about veterans, you know, dealing with post-traumatic stress. We're a member of the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship. and they had a Horses for Heroes program, and you know, they would go to conferences, and it would always address veterans. First responders were kind of like thrown in there. It's like veterans and first responders, but it was usually focused on veterans.
Yeah.
So we focused on veterans from the beginning, and we didn't really promote first responders. And then this past session, I received an email from a gentleman who was a first responder, and he wasn't a veteran, and he asked if he could join the program. And I said, absolutely, because so many veterans that had been part of our program were first responders as well.
Yeah.
They were there because they were veterans, but they were also first responders.
Yeah.
So I said, absolutely, come to the program. And it just so happened one of our other participants who had been to the program last year, and then she repeated it again this year, was also a first responder. So it was really great to be able to see them connect as well. And because it's a small group, we, you know, we're able to take both veterans and first responders, and, you know, it doesn't, it's not necessarily specific to one or the other.
Yeah.
But it just so happened in that group that they both were first responders. So
yeah.
That worked really well, because then they were able to make a connection as well, because that is such an important part of this, is, you know, making connections with the people that come to the program.
Yeah.
So are we going to say something?
No, I'm good.
Once we you know, had a first responder come, then it just sort of opened the door, and it was like, yeah, geez, why aren't we really focusing on first responders as well? And it was kind of funny, because my dad was a volunteer firefighter growing up, and he was an EMT. And so, you know, I'm not really sure why I didn't focus on first responders. And
yeah,
it just was, you know, I think veterans was sort of promoted more, that they were the ones that needed our help. And it's really become, just even since this last session that I ran, it's really become clear to me how much this work is needed in the first responder community. And I feel like the stigma is, it's starting to break down in the veteran community, but I feel like it's so very much there in the first responder community. Mm. And I, you know, podcasts like this are so important in trying to, you know, get rid of that stigma. And you just hear it over and over and over about the stigma, and how, you know, seeking help is seen as such a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been to so many programs for veterans and panel discussions, and, you know, veterans who are willing to stand up and say that, you know, they've experienced trauma and post-traumatic stress. And you don't quite see that in the first responder community.
Yeah.
And so I think it can be very isolating, you know, when you feel like you have these issues and you don't have the support that you need to be able to work through them. And especially in, you know, I've listened to all of your podcast episodes. I've listened to them while I do my barn chores.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And it's just incredible. I think, I can't remember how many people have talked about, you know, there's just this compounding of trauma when you're working in first response. You're experiencing all of these traumas, whether they're little traumas or big traumas. And it's compounding, and you're not getting rid of those. Mm. And then all of a sudden, all these traumas that weren't necessarily traumatizing, now something is traumatizing.
Yeah.
And it reminded me so much of, we work with this concept with horses. There's a trainer out in California. He came up with this thing called 13 rabbits, the 13th rabbit. And it came from a woman who was trail riding, and she was, you know, trail riding with her horse, and these rabbits kept jumping out onto her path, and her horse saw all these rabbits and didn't seem to be bothered by them. And then all of a sudden the 13th rabbit jumped out, and her horse just you know, reared up, dumped her off, and went galloping back to the barn. And she's like, "What? I don't get what happened. He wasn't bothered by any of these other rabbits. And then all of a sudden, the 13th rabbit, he just lost his mind and ran away." And it's really, it was, he was absorbing all these traumas and not shaking them off. And then by the time he got to the 13th rabbit, that was it. He was so far over threshold of what he could tolerate. It just seemed like this big baffling behavior, and it wasn't at all. It was absolutely predictable.
Yeah.
And so that's what, you know, when I was listening to the other podcast, it was like, oh my gosh, this is like the 13 rabbits, all these traumas over these years. Yep. And it's, is it a surprise that, you know, that veterans need support after you've experienced all of these traumas? Mm-hmm. And yes. So our one participant this year, who's a first responder, he said, you know, we were doing a lot of the nervous system regulation, and he's like, I feel like everyone should just be taught this. Like, this should just be what you do. And I was like, that's what I think too.
Exactly. I do too. I think it should be part of some standard program that's implemented in departments and first response. Everyone should be introduced to all of this. It should be just what to do. I mean, think about if you're, you know, a first responder and you're going through the trauma and you're rethinking and reliving all of those events that you have gone through, or you've witnessed, right, and carrying it around with you. And then to be introduced to a program such as yours where it forces them to be in the present, mm-hmm. and block out the noise or let go of the noise that they've been carrying or the load that they've been carrying, and it allows them to be, and think about someone being able to exhale.
Yeah.
You know, just to be able to exhale and go,
right.
You know, just like that release that you were talking about from the horse.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, you just that sigh of release. And that's a big deal for sure.
Oh, yeah.
For someone to be able to experience that and start a healing journey.
Yeah.
In a wonderful way. And think about how many first responders, I don't know, Jay, I think if that was available to you, am I talking into the microphone? If this was available to you, you know, when you were struggling, would you have preferred that versus sitting in a chair?
Yes, I certainly would have. I didn't, when I first reached out for help, I wasn't very well informed about what was available in terms of services. There was some stuff out there, but you had to know where to look. It wasn't just offered to you. I think everything that you're saying makes a lot of sense to anybody that's well informed about trauma, the cumulative effects and the stigma. I'm really glad that you brought that up because it's very true. And people, members of our community, of the first responder and veteran communities, participating in programs like yours is very beneficial, I think, to overcoming that stigma. And I think the conversations that we're having on this podcast is too, because that brings about that awareness. And anybody that's well informed about the human condition and how it's malleable and reactive to trauma understands that addressing those symptoms is necessary for anybody that makes a career or regularly engages in traumatic incidents. I do have a question, though. You mentioned that many of the participants do have a therapist outside of the program. I'm wondering if you notice any difference in terms of outcome at the end of the program for somebody that has sort of unpacked the incidents, got them out there, looked at them, right, and then they're coming in, maybe to, I guess, what I would view as a next stage of healing. Once you get that done, to learning how to be present and to interacting with your own nervous system and calming down. So do you see a difference in outcome to those members who have already engaged or participated in talk therapy as opposed to those where this is a first stop?
Yeah, you know, I think what typically happens, and this is what I hear over and over again, is that I've done everything else, and this is like my last resort. I've tried everything. I've tried all different kinds of therapy, and I'm just trying this because it's something different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talk therapy definitely has its place for sure. But when it comes to trauma, because it's so embodied, it's not always the best place to start, because when we're in the survival regions of our brain, we, you know, talk therapy is sort of engaging our neocortex, and it's hard to be, you know, thinking rationally, reason out things. We may know in our brain that something is so, but the survival region of our brain and the sensations in our body are going, no. Yeah. No, that's not true. And we just can't, you know, we can't override that. And so for a lot of people, and this was actually my personal experience as well. For a lot of people will do traditional talk therapy because it's the most accessible, I think. You know, it's generally what insurance companies cover, you know, unfortunately insurance companies don't cover what we do here. So that's why we're a nonprofit, and we raise money to be able to offer this program for free. But you know, it's, people will sort of do talk therapy and it doesn't necessarily, you know, quote unquote work. And then they'll come to us and be like, you know, I've tried everything else. I want to try this. And then once they do come here and they sort of tune into their body sensations and they learn to regulate the nervous system and they kind of are able to learn how to have that pause between the survival region of their brain and then what their neocortex is saying, then they're able to make better strides in, you know, something like talk therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy. We've heard that from, there was a therapist down at the Warwick VA, the Warwick Vet Center, who brought our very first two participants back in 2014, and continued to bring people for years and years and years and years after that. And, he said he was treating the people who, you know, he was bringing up to the program. And he said he saw such amazing strides since they came to this program. And this was actually in the early days before we were really even incorporating, you know, the natural lifemanship and, you know, the really specific nervous system regulation and, you know, really kind of bringing things like attachment theory and, you know, interpersonal psychology and trauma-informed care and all of that before we were even really consciously bringing that in, and just working with the horses and developing relationships with the horses was really helping them to tune into themselves. So we did hear that was able to make their therapy, you know, with their talk therapist more productive.
Wow.
Yeah. That's, but like, awesome. I said, that was my experience as well, because I experienced post-traumatic stress after a fire in my apartment when I was in college, which is kind of ironic because my dad was a firefighter for so long. And and I, you know, horses were so important in my healing, but they were part of my healing because I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't engaging in equine assisted psychotherapy because I was, you know, around horses, although I probably could have really benefited from it. But I did talk therapy, and one of your guests, I remember her saying, like, she went to a talk therapist and she was just like, you need self-care, take a bubble bath. And, you know, it was, that's kind of where I was. And I was like, this isn't working. This isn't helping me. And it's like, consciously, I know what I'm supposed to do, but I just keep, it's like, I didn't know at that point, but it was like the survival regions of my brain were just taken over all the time.
Yeah.
And, I started to personally do somatic experiencing, which was like a game changer for me. And so much of what is incorporated into natural lifemanship is somatic. It is, you know, based on what is going on in your body. So that was a turning point for me in my own healing. So like I said, the journey that we take people on is a journey that I've been on myself, and I continue to be on as I work with my horses.
So I love all this. I mean, I could talk to you for hours. I listen to you for hours, but I want to ask you, any first responders or veterans who have participated in your programs from the start of the 8 weeks, to the end of the 8 weeks, what are you noticing, or what are they noticing in themselves?
They have reported that they felt, number one, that they have more control over their emotions, that they're not just sort of, you know, carried away by their emotions. They have, we had one veteran who said that he always took, you know, medication to deal with his anxiety. And he said, I never needed it when I would come to the program. Hmm. And it really, it helped me to, you know, lessen my dependence on the medication. And we are 100% not an anti-medication program at all. I absolutely believe that medication serves a purpose because it can help you to put you in a place where you're not in crisis. Because this program is not necessarily, it's not a crisis intervention program.
Yeah.
So we want to be able to, you know, practice these things when we're not specifically in crisis.
Yeah.
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 So I remember him saying that, you know, it just helped him to, you know, feel more present. So he didn't necessarily need his medication when he would come to the barn. We've had veterans who, you know, had come back, you know, from deployment, and they had such a hard time with connecting, you know, with their friends, with their loved ones, and they would go through the program and their family would report, oh my gosh, I've seen such a change. I've seen such a change. They're, you know, connecting with us again. And it feels like it's them again.
Wow.
You know, kind of like retreating into their own, you know, their own head. And now they've been able to, you know, come back and connect with the family again. I remember one veteran had said that he was able to, he was very triggered by a parade that had gone down past his house. And he said he was able to take some of the techniques that we learned here, you know, about nervous system regulation. And he was able to kind of keep himself present and grounded and not sort of spiral, you know, like he would have previously.
Wow.
And so that was really incredible that he was able to specifically, you know, take what we've done here and transfer that to a real life situation that was incredibly triggering.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is not only is it helping the first responder or veteran who's going through the program, but it's also helping families.
Yes. Like,
because if this person is feeling more in control, more present, and being able to regulate from the from what they've learned, well, then they're also going to be able to use that in life, right, and at home. If there's certain triggers that would have normally triggered them before, they're able to sort of control that.
I have to tell you one other one. This one was so incredible to me. One of our horses was working with a veteran, and the day before the session, a balloon, like one of those big graduation balloons, it was like the number of, it was probably they graduated in, you know, 2000 and whatever.
Yeah.
And one of the numbers, one of the big zeros had, it was this big metallic balloon had floated down into the paddock overnight. And so our horse, one of our horses had basically looked at this scary balloon all night long, you know, wondering what the heck this thing was. So he was pretty, you know, he was really kind of, you know, dysregulated to say the least. And so when our veteran came and was working with the horse, he said it really helped him to understand what his wife was going through with him, because, you know, he had to help this horse to regulate after seeing this balloon all night long. And it helped him to see, like, this is what my wife goes through with me. So we couldn't have planned that, you know. It's not like I released a balloon into the paddock just to scare the horse overnight. It's like we couldn't have planned that. But it's just things like that will happen that you just, you can't even create them. You can't.
Yeah. You can't make that up. No, you can't. Yeah. You can't do that. That's where the magic happens.
Yeah.
Right there. Yeah. That, you know, now a participant is actually so in tune with, you know, known his own regulation and also how the horse was not regulated. Right. And wow, be able to put that into his home life, his personal life. Right. Wow. Right.
Yeah.
Julie. Oh my goodness. So I could talk to you, but I want to get in and say, I heard you say that you are a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Share with us a bit about that. And, you know, you said that insurance companies, you know, generally won't cover for someone to participate in the program, right? Yeah. Tell us about your nonprofit, how it's funded, and how do you get funding? And maybe there's someone out there that might want to actually send money your way for great stuff that you're doing. To help with the horses, help maintain the horses. The horses live on your farm. You maintain them. Yeah, I know she maintains them because the day that I went down there, she's in the barn sweating, doing whatever she had to do for the morning chores, right? Of the morning before she came and interviewed with us and spent very gracious time with us, sharing about the whole program. So tell us how you're funded. We want our listeners to hear about that and that the program is free. How they can find out about you, how they can sign up, all of that stuff. Share with us.
So we are a 501c3, and our program for veterans and first responders is entirely free. There's no charge at all. So that is covered by our donors, and we have different organizations and individuals who will support us. We generally don't rely on, you know, grants and things like that, just because it's a big process to get a grant. You know, so often people are like, oh, why don't you just get a grant? And grant writing is a whole huge thing. And you generally have to apply for lots of grants in order to get one. So, you know, I would really rather spend my time in the barn with the veterans and the first responders and the horses and the people. So we're lucky that we do have some really great organizations that support us. And, you know, my fear was always, oh, we're such a small program. You know, we only serve, you know, a max of 4 people each session. Plus we have a couple of slots for, you know, private psychotherapy. Do people want to support a little program like this? And I am so thrilled to say that they do. They really do. And we just received a $5,000 donation from a woman who needed to take a distribution on her IRA because she's reached a certain age and she really didn't need the money. And so she donated it to Wild Hearts. Wow. We're going to receive another donation in August from the Massachusetts Morgan Horse Association. They do a big silent auction, and that'll probably be about a $2,000 donation. And so, you know, I'm just so thrilled that, you know, people and organizations, they really do want to support a small program like this. Because it makes such a huge impact. And, you know, like you said, it's not just the people who come here, but it's their families, their friends, you know, their spouses, their children. The reach is so much farther than even just, you know, the one participant who comes here.
Yeah.
So the police union of one of our participants made a donation. So, you know, we get donations from places like that. And the vast majority of it goes to caring for the horses.
Yeah.
You know, we have a pretty low administrative costs. I personally don't get paid. I do it volunteer. I'm fortunate that, you know, I'm married to somebody who puts up with my horse habit and, you know, will allow me to do this with the horses, and I don't have to worry about making a salary. So I do this, you know, for free because it's so important to me. And but it's great to have the help to take care of the horses, because our horses are getting older, and they're getting, you know, they were expensive before, and now they're really expensive now.
Yeah.
We keep them in really great care.
Do you have anyone come in to help take care of the horses physically, or share with us about that also?
Yeah. So it is just me, and I'm okay with that, because that is one of the reasons why I do like the program small. And, you know, in the future, it would be great to be able to serve more people. But right now, the relationship and the connection with the horses is so important to me, because that's what everything is built on. And so it's very important to me that those horses have a relationship and a connection with someone. And it can be kind of hard when you get bigger and you have, you know, a lot of people taking care of the horses, and the horses aren't necessarily someone's horse. You know, they're kind of owned by whatever the organization is.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that they can't take great care of their horses, but just sort of where I am with this program and with the direction I'm going with it, I feel like it's really important that they have a relationship and a connection with a person, and that person is me. And I love taking care of them. I love putting my earbuds in and doing my barn work and my stalls and my, you know, picking the paddocks in the morning. And it just gives me a chance to connect with the horses and make sure everybody's healthy, you know, make sure everybody's drinking what they should be and eating what they should be, make sure nobody's lame, you know. So it gives me an opportunity to just kind of have that, you know, kind of a continuity of care that, you know, I'm able to see everything that goes on with these guys.
Yeah, just like mom at baby, right?
Yeah,
paying exactly attention to what's going on with the kids, right?
Absolutely.
So-and-so's not eating their breakfast this morning, you know?
Right.
How come?
Right. Exactly.
So you're able to be, by you doing that yourself, you're able to continually see the care, monitor the care that's going on with them, the health-wise.
Yeah,
so, absolutely. How can people find you?
So on our website, which is wildheartstherapeutic.org, we, and in fact, I just updated the website. I forced myself on that really rainy day. I forced myself to do my website updates. It was so outdated. I did update the website with all the current dates for the fall. And the application, the new application is up there. So if you want to participate in the Friday program, all you have to do is download the application, fill it out, send it in. Generally, what we do is we have the 4 spots for new participants, and then we have a waiting list of people who've come in the past. So if a spot opens up, or if we don't fill all 4 spots, then we'll go down the waiting list so that people can continue to come back.
Yeah.
Because most people, they really do want to
come
back. They want
to come back. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We get a lot of repeat people who want to come back.
So,
and then the psychotherapy, there's a page on our website for the psychotherapy. For civilians, there is a charge for that, and unfortunately we're not able to accept insurance, but for first responders and for veterans, we're able to offer, because of our donors, a really deep discount. So if someone is interested in those individual sessions, just give us a call, and then we can talk to you about, you know, how you would pay for it, and you know, setting up an appointment to come to the farm.
Yeah. Oh, and so once they get an application in, it's not guaranteed that they're going to make a spot at that time, right? Because you've only got 4
slots open. Yeah. Yep. So we're accepting applications now for our fall program. And I don't have any official applications that have come in for new people, but I do have a waiting list that I could fill those 4 spots with people who are, you know, want to come back. So if someone is interested, I would encourage them to get their applications in, because we do have a deadline. It's the end of August, and the deadline is up there on the website, just because we need to be able to give our volunteer enough notice. We have a couple of wonderful volunteers that bring their horses. And one of our volunteers, she has to put in for her vacation. She actually takes a vacation day to be able to bring her horses here.
Wow.
She loves the program. And so we want to be able to give her notice so that she can, you know, make sure that she's available to bring her horses.
So. Absolutely amazing. So we got all, we got the message out there. We have, we know where people can reach out to you. We know that there's a free of free because of donations for first responders and veterans. And then the private one-on-one program, there's a fee for that. People find that out. Is there a fee for that posted on your website?
Yes.
And then also for first responders, does a discount
for veterans? Yeah, really, it's like a third of the price to be able to do it. A first responder or a veteran. And I should mention too, for the Friday program, the application is very simple. I know that that tends to be a deterrent for veterans, is that they really don't want to fill out, you know, a long application that asks them to disclose tons of things and, you know, have a doctor's note and all that other stuff. So it's a really simple application. It's basically just contact information. And then the last page is any information you want to give us. It's completely optional. You can give us diagnosis information. You can give us medications. You can, you know, give us whatever information you feel like you want us to know. But you don't have to fill out any of it if you don't want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a really easy application.
I love this program so much. Really, really do. Love it. Absolutely love it. Do you want to chime in, Jay?
Just to say, Julie, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and for the incredibly good work that you're doing. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to speak with you and to meet you.
Well, thank you so much. It was, you know, like I said, I've listened to all of your episodes and your guests have been incredible. I mean, just the stories that they've been willing to share. And so it's really an honor to be included on this podcast.
Well, it's an honor for us to have you on. This is something that I've been looking for, like searching since we started, you know, the podcast. I didn't want to just be, you know, myself and Jay, did we just wanted to be interviewing or someone telling a story or talking about suicide constantly all the time, but offering resources and in a holistic way. Just another option, right? Just another option out there for someone to be able to use, and that just might fit them. If another thing is not working for them, and I've been searching and searching for it, and I'm so glad you answered the phone that day.
outdated voicemail.
I was trying and called for right from the beginning when we did it, and it was like, I'm so persistent, and the name never came off my list of calling, and so eventually she answered the phone, and we made a connection, and updated the phone or whatever it was.
Yes, but
we made a connection. So I feel very blessed that you did answer the phone that day, and we were getting to experience this and getting to share this information with our listeners, which is very important. And I do know it, when people do get this message out there, you're going to probably be bombarded with applications. You'll have applications going on, but I'm sure like also the private sessions. Yeah. And just a holistic approach of it, your knowledge, I mean, you're just, your knowledge is just like priceless about what you do and the horses and just the journey you just took us on and sharing all that information with us tonight is just absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to sharing that information with so many others who might possibly need this service for sure. Julie, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Julie shares with us that when first responders are experiencing the effects of trauma that's built up over time, it often leads to feelings or behaviors like isolation and the inability to connect with friends and family. Equine psychotherapy can help first responders regulate their nervous system. Participants learn how to connect or reconnect in relationships and have a greater understanding of themselves. If you are actively involved with a first responder peer support program, or if you carry organizational authority, please consider reaching out to Julie to learn more and decide if her Wild Hearts program is something that could benefit the men and women that you represent. Until next time.
Till next time.